Sometimes, when the moment is right and the sparks fly, dating can be magic. But even the most romantic connection can get a little awkward.
And the dog's kind of watching us at this point, and so it started to lick my ear.
True Dating Stories is the new CBC podcast that explores the messy corners of romance. Real-life tales told by the people who live them.
I'm tied up on this dude's bed, and there's nobody around to help.
True Dating Stories is available from CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hi, I'm Peter Oldring.
And I'm Pat Kelly, and you're listening to This Is That, the show that brings you stories you won't hear anywhere else.
News. Are you people mad?
This gives me great grief.
Fake news.
The very thought of that offends me.
It's a terrible idea.
Documentary.
Oh, I just love the idea.
Come on.
Interviews.
I just couldn't believe my ears.
This is that.
For the first time ever, the province of Manitoba has made international headlines. On Monday, it was disclosed that Manitoba Tourism has contracted celebrity Brad Pitt to officially endorse the province. Endorse it for what? Well, that remains unclear. Joining me now to shed some light on this unusual maneuver by Manitoba is their Commissioner of Tourism, Mr. Gerald Crawford. Hello, Mr. Crawford.
Hi.
Thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have the opportunity.
So I guess the first question and the big one on everybody's mind, especially for Manitobans, is why have you spent over $1 million to have Brad Pitt represent the province of Manitoba?
Oh, well, I mean, you just have to go and take a little look at the filmography. When you think of Brad Pitt, you think of that kind of rugged, machismo, sort of mysterious person. And in so many ways, that's the spirit of Manitoba. You know, Manitoba, if it were a film, is kind of your Ocean's 11, or your Mr. and Mrs. Smith. There's a real kind of undercurrent of mystery and intrigue to it. So we felt that's the energy that I think best represents Manitoba, is that Brad Pitt sort of mystery charisma.
Okay, so in your conversations...
Sleepers. And he played Michael Sullivan in Sleepers as well. That's another Manitoba-style character.
Okay, so why don't we talk a little bit about what exactly Mr. Brad Pitt will be doing then?
Right.
What will his responsibilities be to the province in order to promote Manitoba to the world?
Well, we've really left that open. We didn't want to put any parameters on what we're expecting him to do. It's Brad Pitt. It's not like, you know, we can be at his beck and call or vice versa. So we've been working with Brad's team, and so now it becomes about the minutiae of what will he do.
Well, have you spoken with him? What will he be doing?
No, at this point it's just not how it works. You're not going to call Brad Pitt. We've been dealing with Brad's team, and so these are. Agents and lawyers, and so we've got the deal in place with them. The funds are escrowed.
So you've paid them.
Yes. Well,
and you have not spoken to Brad Pitt yet about what
should. No, but it's a pay or play scenario. You have to pay to play. Oh. So that's been done, and so now it's about the play.
Okay. So what would you like him to do?
Right. Well. We wanted to really leave that as open as possible because, as his representation reminded us, Brad's an artist, and you don't handcuff an artist. You kind of let him bring as much to the table as he can. But I can tell you this much. He is definitely agreed to wearing a Manitoba lapel pin at the upcoming Teen Choice Awards, and so on the red carpet. So that will be, he is doing that.
So for $1 million, you've guaranteed that he'll wear a lapel pin at the...
Yes.
Okay.
That's...
So will Brad Pitt be required to then come and visit Manitoba at some point this year?
No. I mean, we're not... That's, he's obviously very busy. Not to say that he might not swing through. You know, it's very possible he could shoot something here. We shoot a lot of movies here. But we already, all of us here at the Tourism Board, we've all been given a headshot and a signed, signatured headshot that says Brad Pitt. So in some ways, he's already here.
And in other ways, I think you know what $1 million gets you.
Yes, yes. It's amazing, isn't it?
Well, I want to thank you for being on the program, Mr. Crawford. It'll certainly be interesting to see how this plays out for the province and for Mr. Pitt.
Well, we certainly thank you very much. And I have to tell you that if this falls short, we have on good word from the agents that we can use some of that money to get Bill Paxton. So.
When the story you just heard originally aired, we received a lot of feedback. Here's what real people had to say about the province of Manitoba paying Brad Pitt to endorse their province.
What a waste of taxpayers' money.
I just don't understand the point of that.
Elevating a Brad Pitt is abhorrent.
I'm just absolutely livid. Is this a fake thing?
They felt it was a good investment to pay Brad over $1 million to wear a lapel pin at the Teen Choice Awards and possibly swing by.
Give me $1,000 and I'll wear 100 pins.
How about like Clint Eastwood, man? Now that's a guy who you want to endorse your province.
I think that they should have paid Shia LaBeouf $1 million.
I think we have a plethora of wonderfully high-profile celebrity talent in our own country.
I can't think of which ones have come out of Manitoba.
First, I just want to say I do respect the fact that they're thinking outside the box.
Of course they should hire him.
Our province gave a consulting firm $600,000 to come up with a new slogan for the province.
I don't think it's a problem to have an American celebrity promote the province.
$1 million to Brad Pitt? Probably actually a better investment by comparison. Thanks.
Just like Loch Ness in the Scottish Highlands, there's a lake in Western Canada that many believe is home to a mysterious and rarely seen creature called the Ogopogo. This week, however, a marine biologist by the name of George Herring published a controversial article in the Journal of Aquatic Life and Science that has many believers up in arms. Hello, Mr. Herring. Thank you for joining us.
Hello. Thank you for having me on your program.
So tell us a little bit about your controversial study.
Well, the study is one that we have been working on for the last 10 years out of the University of British Columbia. And the sole purpose of the study was to investigate the Lake Okanagan and come to some conclusion as to whether or not the Ogopogo exists in Lake Okanagan. And
okay.
We can.
For those that don't know, the Ogopogo is.
The Ogopogo is a name of a fictional, mythical sort of creature that people have believed to have been living in Lake Okanagan.
Yes, the friendly monster of the lake.
Yes. We have come to the conclusion after spending, as I said, 10 years working on this, that there is absolutely no Ogopogo living in Lake Okanagan.
So where do you think it went?
I'm sorry?
So where do you think it went?
No, this is not an issue of it went somewhere else. This is proving that it not exist at all within the lake.
Okay, so it is possible that it could be living somewhere else, like the Shuswap.
The point of the whole study was that it does not exist at all, nor did it ever did.
No, I understand that, but what I'm saying is that your science has suggested it could be alive somewhere else.
No, the science doesn't suggest anything. The science proves that it does not exist within Lake Okanagan.
I think this is semantics. But let's move on to the actual science involved in your study. What did you do?
Well, we used every scientific method that there was available to us, which is obviously using different methods to look for the Ogopogo.
Okay, so you were using the science of looking?
Well, yes, that is the simple explanation, simplified way of saying it, but we used a lot of, obviously scientific research and
I'm assuming that you were using sonar or...
Yes, absolutely. Sonar was definitely part of our search.
And was that pretty much it?
No, the sonar was one very specific element of our search. We used GPS tracking.
Okay,
as
so maybe
well
some aerial photography.
Absolutely, yes.
Infrared temperature searching.
Yes, and teams of divers
dragging
over
nets,
the last
depth charges, skip search techniques. Have you used the military?
No, this was not a military study.
Okay, so you didn't use that.
No, we simply just used every sort of scientific tool that was available to us to look for it, and we can conclusively say that the Ogopogo, simply because we spent 10 years using every technique to look, does not exist.
Did you drain the lake?
I'm sorry, I don't...
Did you get that water out of there and take a good look?
Well, no, we didn't, because this obviously would be physically impossible.
Okay, you used some things and you...
Well, no, we used everything that we could
possibly...
But
draining the lake. Okay, so there's a chance that it's not there. Possibly it's moved somewhere else.
I would say that there is a 99.999% chance that the Ogopogo does not exist.
Exactly, so there's still a chance.
Well, not realistically, no. This is not something...
So what do you think this is going to do to tourism in the area?
Well, I don't think that it will affect it that much. I can't imagine that everybody goes to the Lake Okanagan simply to see a glimpse of something that does not exist.
I don't know why else you'd go.
Well, it's a wonderful lake where people enjoy the summer activities and boating and skidoing.
Okay, so what you're saying is that for people that are interested, enthusiasts of the Ogopogo, they should check out the Shuswap or some of the other larger lakes in the interior.
No, I didn't say that at all.
That's just what I inferred. Okay, well, this was Dr. George Herring, who is joining us from the Department of Marine Sciences at the University of British Columbia, who has come up with the interesting theory that the Ogopogo has now shifted locations from the Lake Okanagan to either the Shuswap or another large interior lake. Thank you so much, Mr. Herring.
Word theory.
Thank you so much, Mr. Herring.
And now, a This Is That documentary.
We're going to start pretty simple here. The first game is going to be a single line anywhere on the car. That's a single line anywhere on the car.
In the quiet South Brandon neighborhood of Richmond Park sits a bingo hall simply known as Dauber's.
And the first ball is...
Packed to the rafters, hundreds of bingo players have congregated here to play a game called by Gary Bingo, a man who some are saying is the most inspirational bingo caller of all time.
Oh, you know, he's just an absolute angel.
I came to see Gary a year ago, call bingo, and I haven't touched a drop since.
You know, I spend a lot of time at home, and Gary makes me want to get out of bed in the morning.
I don't even play the game. I just come to sit in the back and listen to Gary.
Gary's approach to calling bingo is different than most.
The next number is under the eye, 17.
Rather than simply call the numbers, in a way, Gary actually preaches them.
Under the eye, 17. You know, I was only 17 years old when I ran away from home, and if I could turn back the hands of time, I surely would and say, Mom, I was hot-headed back then. I wish I never left under those circumstances. Eye, 17.
I sat down with Gary to find out how he developed his approach to calling bingo.
I actually had a health scare. About a year ago, I had an unusual tumor in my lower back.
B15, young and keen. Oh, the energy and vibrancy of youth.
And after a series of appointments and tests, I finally got the good news... that it was fine, and I remember immediately after receiving that news, I had a game that I was calling, and the first number that came up was B9.
You know, I used to be overweight, and you know, it wasn't until I addressed the real problem, I was an emotional eater.
And I said, B9. It was B9, and I just cried. I just wept.
You know, before I call out this next number... I want you to think about that special someone that you wish could be seated beside you right now playing the game.
And as I was revealing more and more about myself, I could just hear the hall bubble to life.
I love you, Gary!
And I love you!
Although there is nothing religious about what Gary is doing, the people who come to play are in a way like a congregation.
My name is Cindy Granger, and I've been coming to play bingo with Gary for about 3 years now. But about 8 months ago, he changed my life.
Really? How did he change your life?
I'll never forget it, actually. He pulled out the little ball and he said, before it's too late, why don't you go back to school? And the next day, I walked down to the community college, signed up, and I am on my way to being a registered nurse.
According to Gary, this is just the beginning. He wants to grow his movement and feels there are still big things he can do with Bingo.
I can tell you this much. I do have a book that I've been writing. It's called Bingo, My Calling to Call. It's sort of personal revelations I've had in the hall. And I'm very excited because this February we launch into our Bingo Halls for Humanity. We're actually building a hall in Ecuador.
As the night comes to an end, I begin to develop a greater appreciation not only for Gary, but for the game of bingo.
Wonderful words.
Wow,
really,
so
really effective.
Perhaps meaning can be found in the simplest of places. And for the players here at Dauber's Bingo Hall, they find meaning in the words of their beloved caller, Gary.
Oh, thank you.
Would you like a picture? We can
together.
Here we go. You know, I think people originally went to the bingo hall thinking that that's all they needed, just a good game of bingo. And this has revealed that that's not the case. They do need more. And let's face it, a $200 payout for winning four corners isn't bad. Not in Brandon, anyways.
For This Is That, and one number away from a blackout bingo, I'm Pat Kelly.
Bingo!
Okay, I understand the bingo has been called, but I would like you to just hang on a second because I do have a thought I'd like to share.
Hi, I'm Mark Chavez. I'm one of the hosts of Let's Make a comedy docuseries podcast about the creative process. Each season, my co-hosts, Ryan Beal, Maddie Kelly, and I take on an artistic challenge and you follow our journey. In Let's Make a Sci-Fi, we wrote a science fiction TV pilot. In Let's Make a Rom-Com, we wrote a romantic comedy film. And on our latest season, Let's Make a Horror, we produced a horror short film. And when we run into trouble, we interview Hollywood experts. People who have worked on big things like The Blair Witch Project, The Office, Star Wars, Mamma Mia, and more. All three seasons of Let's Make a are available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
To be kidding me.
I'm just so furious about this.
This is ridiculous. Have a good day.
This Is That.
Well, if you've found yourself at a dinner party or a board game night over the past few months, there's a good chance you've heard of the new board game sweeping the nation called Ready, Ready, Go. With over 3 million units sold, it has turned its inventor, Lyle Schultz, into a board game tycoon and completely disrupted board game nights across North America. Lyle Schultz joins us now to tell us more about the unbelievable rise of Ready, Ready, Go. Mr. Schultz, welcome to This Is That.
Well, thank you very much for having me in the studio. It's beautiful in here.
Tell us, how did the game Ready, Ready, Go come to be?
It's a funny story, actually. My wife Helen and I were huge gamers in college. I mean, we would be teased mercilessly, but we just loved games. Of course, later in our life, we had quite a collection of games. And so one day I said, Helen, the kids are in bed. Let's go back to college days. And let's play some games. So we went over to the cupboard, and we pulled out all of the games. And, of course, well, you've got a piece of the Snakes and Ladders game. Here you've got a Trivial Pursuit deck. Here you've got a Dice from a Boggle game. It was just a jumble. We couldn't play one game. So we said, well, you know, shoot, this isn't fun. And then we decided, well, let's make a game with the pieces that we have. And that was kind of the very beginning of Ready, Ready, Go. Or as Helen and I joke, Ready, Squared, Go. It's a math pun.
So for those people who haven't played the game, which is likely a lot because they can't get their hands on it.
Oh, I know. Isn't that crazy?
Tell us a little bit how the game works. What are the rules of Ready, Ready, Go?
Well, it's pretty simple. You start with an 8-sided board. Every player is given a tile, which is made of mother of pearl, or beautiful tiles, actually, and a colorful orb. Now, everyone will then be passed around a bag of dice. You pull out a dice, you give it a roll. Whoever has the highest number is the person that gets to go immediately to the home screen. square. Once you're on the home square, you go into the deck of 52 cards. Half of the cards are question, half of the cards are numbers. So if you get a number, well, that's the number of spaces that you have to keep between the tile and the orb for the entire round. If you get a question, that means that you are simply riding sidecar. The tile and the orb stay together for the entire round, and you read out either the question on the card, or you can be the master fibber.
Well, that certainly sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, I'm not quite done yet there, because once you're at the Quig's wheel, you're not going to just stand there. You've got to spin it. So you're going to spin the wheel, and you'll either get a wrench, a rope, or a pipe. You then have to go immediately to the Magic Gathering, where one person will be the miniature wizard and will assign everybody a player that they will play with for the rest of the round, and then you will go immediately into a meeting at the Coven.
Well, people
and
certainly
then
are...
out of the Witch's Coven, one person will be elected to climb Jacob's Ladder. Of course, if you're riding sidecar, this will be impossible. But if you're not riding sidecar, that means that you will piggyback up the ladder. Take a snake to the bottom, you're given a boggled dice, and you have to wear the bag of shame.
Okay.
Of course, if they get out, that's when they have to go to the Rubik's Ball.
So then
if they solve the ball, which is easy because it's sort of a simpler version of the Rubik's Cube because it's a perfect ball, it's just one color. If they solve it, they will become the artist for a day. They're given a palette, a 2x2-inch canvas, and they have to paint who they thought was killed by either the wrench, the rope, or the pipe. If people guess who it is, then we move on to round two.
Well, when people are playing this game, it's truly infectious.
It seems to be. I mean, this stuff we always joke is more addictive than smoking cigarettes, you know? It's just very popular.
So, how has life changed for you? Obviously, the success of this game has to change your life a little bit. Are things different?
Well, you know, it's like the old saying goes, you can wave a pearl in front of a pig, but he's still got dirt on his back. And I think that the truth still remains. We've got a lot more money. I mean, we're certainly, financially, we've got zero worries, but we've still got a lot of the same problems that other people do. You know, we're trying to raise two teens, and one of them's adventurous, to say the least, promiscuous, to be a bit more specific. But we're trying to sort of navigate our way through that, but certainly we don't have financial worries. We could, Helen and I often joke, well, we could have a bonfire of $100 bills every single night and we wouldn't even notice a dip in our accounts. I mean, we wouldn't do it. It's not responsible, but I actually think technically we could, and it's true. We wouldn't notice a difference.
I want to congratulate you on the success of the game.
Well, thank you so much for having me here. This has been a real treat.
And now, a This Is That documentary that documents people. In this piece, we meet Lou Henderson, or Lou Rocketship, and learn about his long-forgotten contribution to glam rock music.
How are you?
Good. Listen, just give me about 10 minutes. I got a flood again. The figure skaters are on there, chewed up the ice pretty good.
My name is Lou Henderson, and I'm a Zamboni driver here in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan.
Hey, Lou. Is it all right if we use some of the practice pucks?
You can bring your own pucks.
I wasn't always a Zamboni driver. Actually, in 1973, I went by the alias of Lou Rocketship. I was known as Canada's number one glam glitter rock star.
Hey, what's shaking out there, all you dreamers? It's Sandy Saturn here, giving you exactly what you need. The latest cut from the one and only Lou Rocketship. Baby, this track will send you to your outer reaches. This, my friend, is Orbit Wizard.
I sing this spell from his shooting star. The Orbit Wizard will take you far.
So, Lou Rocketship. Tell me about him.
Well, how would I describe Lou Rocketship?
You know, I really prided myself on being, like, as androgynous as possible, eh? Like, if you came to one of my shows, you couldn't tell if it was a guy or a girl up there. It was just, like, this thing, right? It was just floating in outer space.
I had a big glitter star, silver star on my face. I wore 36-inch heeled boots that had a big glitter cannon coming out of the heel. So at the climax of the show, right, it would be like the crowd would just be sprayed with glitter. You know, I don't want to lie to you. I was fabulous. It was fabulous. Yeah.
Someone put paper towel down the toilet in the men's change room. It's a huge mess. And you put on the gloves and just make sure, because it's everywhere.
Okay, yeah. Excuse me, guys. I got to go clean the can, so I'll see you later.
My name is Rick Flambone, and I'm a music writer for Bang Bang magazine. You know, if you ask anybody in the music business who the best glam rockers were in the 70s, well, you'd have the top three: Bowie, Alvin Stardust, and then, of course, Lou Rocketship. I mean, you know, Lou was just that good. He was so theatrical and charismatic and just, well, I don't know, just fabulous. You know, and to sort of think that this androgynous unicorn sort of appeared from Canada was just shocking in the music business. I mean, he really had it all, which is, it's so sad when you think about the fact that he just quit. He just disappeared. You know, it's always been a bit of a mystery as to why he stopped.
Your money's no good. All you've got is your glitter. Your hopes are all gone.
Why did I quit? Well, you know, truth be told, I don't really have a great answer for you. I was just, you know, the reality was I was approaching 30, and, you know, everybody's got to come back down to earth at some point, man. You know, and so that's why I decided to come back here to Moose Jaw and pursue my second passion, which was driving Zamboni. You know, in its own right, it's pretty fabulous too. You know, there's a certain mystique to kind of being out there in the middle of the rink at 5:30 in the morning by yourself, just you and the ice.
All right, boys, listen up. You got 5 minutes, okay? I gotta clean up the rink, so let's get out of here. Wrap it up.
Good on, man.
I'm not denying that Lou Rocketship's not a part of me. I mean, he's still in there for sure. He'll forever be a part of me. And you know, there's times for sure where I'll let him out.
Got those boots. No, they're right here. Yeah.
Sometimes when everybody's left the rink, I'll come in here and I'll dim the lights and I'll crank the music and
there you go.
Just kind of bask in the feeling of what it used to be like to be a real moonbeam rider.
Captain, it's a change.
You know, the world in a bigger sense may not get the chance to see Lou Rocketship anymore, but you know, the bottom line is I know he's in there, right? And that's all that matters.
Ooh,
Lou, I forgot my skates. I must have left them in the.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Oh, hey, Brian.
What are you doing?
Just
ooh, what are you doing? It's all androgynous in here.
What do you need?
Forget it, son. Just saw I left my skates. Forget it.
I'll come get them for you.
Fine.
I am Lou Rocketship.
Don't worry about that. I ain't trying to forget what you just saw.
Well, that was another episode of This Is That from CBC Podcasts. This show was created and performed by me, Pat Kelly.
And by me, Peter Oldring. With additional voices supplied by
Lauren Ash.
Production support by Kelly and Kelly. Head of production, Lauren Berkovich. Senior producer and sound designer, Chris Kelly. Additional editing by Max Collins. Roshni Nair is our digital coordinating producer.
Executive producers are Cecil Fernandez and Chris Oak.
Tanya Springer is the senior manager of CBC Podcasts, and Arif Nurani is the director.
Thanks for listening, and remember, if it's not this, then it must be that.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.